Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to December. Do, 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 do. Now that I'm alone up in the intro, I just really feel like I have full reign to do and say whatever I please. We are going to get into the I in team very shortly, but before we do, a few things. First of all, London, we aren't there yet as I'm recording this, but by the time this gets into your little Scooby ears, we will have probably met, James Marsters and other Buffy alum over at the London Vampire Ball. Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, or on Facebook, or all three at BufferingCast, and you can see those pictures, stay updated, and patrons, we are going to send you some extra content from our time at the con as well. If you want to become a patron, of course, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on Patreon and you can find out all of the wonderful, lovely, brilliant things that you get by being one of our patrons. Seattle, we are getting closer to coming out to your city. January 19th and 20th, we will be at PodCon. And stay tuned because we will hopefully have some details on a meetup that we are arranging for January 21st in the early afternoon. Now, before I get to the other newsy news, we of course have to get to spooky news. Spooky news. All right, I'm going to get historical with this spooky news because I want to keep you on your toes. It doesn't have to be something that just happened. It can be something that happened, I don't know, when like King Louis the... Let's see, XIV, that's 10, 5, and 1. So 10 and 5 and 1 is 4, is 14th? King Louis the 14th. King Louis the 14th. Okay, I did it there live for you, so you would know that I not only understand Roman numerals, but I can compute them very quickly in my head. So this is a news story from a long, long time ago, and it's about when King Louis the 14th died. Okay, so here's the deal. He died, and his heart was removed from his body and embalmed because his dad's heart, King Louis XIII, a much easier Roman numeral to read for me, his heart had been embalmed. So they were like, okay, dad's heart's over here, so son king is going to go over here. There's these two embalmed hearts. That's not even the spooky part. First of all, the heart of King Louis XIV didn't stay next to the dads for long because the English nobleman, this dude, Lord Harcourt, was such a fan of King Louis XIV that he acquired the heart and placed it in a silver casket, which he would occasionally take out to show to his guests. Okay, so we have two kings, a dad and a son. Both of their hearts are embalmed. They're supposed to stay together, but this dude, Lord Harcourt, is like, but I love King Louis XIV. I want to know how much sexual tension was happening here. Gets the heart, puts it in a casket. That's not the spooky news either, because one of the guests whom Lord Harcourt showed the heart to was this dude, William Buckland, who was a British theologian. He also famously described and named the first known dinosaur, Megalosaurus. This dude is like really, you should read about William Buckland. Lots of information on this dude, but I'm not going to tell you all of it. I'm just going to let you know that this dude had made it his life's mission to taste every animal he could. So when Harcourt shows him the embalmed heart of Louis XIV, Buckland's like, yeah, dude, let me eat that shit. He ate it. He ate the heart. He ate King Louis XIV's heart. Now, he died shortly after eating the heart. I looked into this because I was like, is it because he ate the heart? But it was far enough after that I don't think the heart actually killed him. He was buried in St. Nicholas's Churchyard in Oxfordshire, England. Maybe we'll have time to go and see that gravesite of William Buckland. And Louis XIV is buried in the St. Denis Basilica, but he doesn't have his heart. So his heart is in the belly of Buckland over in Oxfordshire. I mean, I think it's pretty spooky. Please, please send me all of your spooky news. Email me at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. If you see a new news story, if you see an old news story, send it all my way. I will choose these news stories and report them to you dutifully every episode. Until next time, that's been Spooky News. Okay, as I mentioned, we're in December, and that means it's time to get your holiday gifts if you haven't already. If you didn't already know this, we have new palm hats that say Jenny's now infamous catchphrase, wow, 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 wow. How many wows was that? Wow, 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 wow. Yeah, it says it four times across the hat. We have kid-sized Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy t-shirts. We have mugs back in stock. We have Alewife t-shirts. We have so many things. And as many of you know, we host all of our merch through a place called Hello Merch. We love Hello Merch. And also Angel on Top, Jenny Owen Young's, and Gay Stuff by Kristen, my new little store, are all hosted at Hello Merch, which means you can get things from all four of those places if you want. You can get an Alewife tee and a patriarchy mug by us. You can check out Angel on Top's new Cordelia t-shirt or their new Big Demon Energy enamel pin. You can grab some of Jenny's music or some of her t-shirts. She has awesome shirts and sweatshirts for you. And you can go and grab some Gay Stuff in my store, Gay Stuff by Kristen. You can put it all in the same cart. Fun for the whole family. Also, while we're talking about gift giving, tis the season, whatever that means. No, we do know what it means, actually, in this case. Many of you have been asking about our handwritten lyric sheets because you want to get some for your loved ones for the holidays. We have put up 5. I don't know how many remain because we put them up last week, but hopefully there are still some there for you. All of the proceeds from the handwritten lyric sheets will go to benefit Trans Lifeline. Definitely a really awesome time to be giving some dollars to Trans Lifeline. They do incredible work. You can check them out at translifeline.org. There's 5 sheets. That's all we're going to be able to do this holiday season. So grab them if you want one. And they are now up in our actual store. So they're no longer in their own little place. You can get them just by going to bufferingthevampireslayer.com, clicking on shop. So you'll see all that good stuff plus the lyric sheets. And again, 100% of the proceeds go to benefit Trans Lifeline. We will be back in your ears on December 19th with an episode for Goodbye Iowa before we take a couple weeks off for the holidays, and you might want to tune into that episode for a few reasons, one of which is that we'll have a pretty fun announcement up in that intro. Okay, I think we're ready to talk about the Iron Team. Hello and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one at a time, spoiler free. My name is Jenny Owen Youngs.
You all right?
Yes.
You gonna make it?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Kristen Russo. And this week we are talking about season 4, episode 13, The Eye in Team. Funny, I didn't think there was an I in team.
There's not, but there's an M and an E.
Oh, wow. Deep. I guess we'll get there. Okay. Stay tuned at the end of this podcast every week for an original song written by us, recapping the Buffy episode we are discussing. And listen, if you haven't yet started listening to our Angel podcast, Angel on Top, hosted by Brittany Ashley and Laura Zach, what are you doing?
What indeed? The I in Team was written by David Fury and directed by James A. Contner. Originally aired on February 8th in the year 2000.
This is the one where Buffy teams up with Riley after she's allowed access to the initiative. Spike is targeted by commandos. It's a weird summary. Like, I feel like those are important points, but they're like, Anya plays poker. Like, it just feels like they could have gone a little bit more in depth with the whole thing. Jenny, before we go any further, I'd like to let you and our listeners know that I have graduated to my 5th notebook of Buffy notes.
Congratulations.
Yes. The Iron Team marks the first entry into notebook number 5 of my ongoing notebook. She's scoffing at me.
No, I'm not scoffing at you. I'm just like, ugh, of all the episodes to like start a new notebook on, it's like,
Yeah, it's a little anticlimactic, but nevertheless.
So is your first note in your new notebook poker night?
No, actually, my first notebook, my first note in my notebook is, previously, LOL Spike, The Rose, you're strong, I like it.
Dude!
I just like, those were my previously on highlights. Like, I was really glad that we got to see The Rose highlighted again. After I just like, I just edited and we're about to put up the episode for A New Man. And so I just recently listened to you and Kate and I talk about The Rose and
what did
taking
we say?
The petals off the rose. We just had a good time with it. So I was delighted to see it in the previous one. And then just like Riley being like, you're strong. I like it.
I think that's a great look for Riley.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty into it. I think it's like, I mean, I've been recently trying to analyze everyone's kinks, which is really very present in this episode, actually. And I think that like one of Riley's developing kinks is like he's learning that he is turned on by a woman who can bench press him.
Wow.
You know?
Yes.
And like, who doesn't get that?
No, I'm on board.
So now we're at the poker table.
Yeah, Anya's got a couple of kinks.
Yes.
Money.
Money is probably her top
kink. This is
kink.
Like, is this the first time we've seen Anya and money?
I think so. It's hard to say because I have so, like, I have all of the Anya money memories in my memory bank.
Sure.
But no pun intended. But I think this is the first time that she's, because it's almost like we're learning, it's almost like we're watching her learn what money can do in real time in this episode, right? Because she's like on Xander for like selling these bars and he's like, but money will mean I can buy you things.
Right,
and you see her like perk up.
Yep.
So I think yes is the short answer.
And also spanking.
And yes, Anya's other kink is spanking. Now, who do you think spanks
who? Yeah,
too?
I mean, it's like, is it her kink or is it Xander's? And which direction is it
right?
going?
Difficult
to say.
I very much imagine it's an Anya spanking Xander. I'm so
I
sorry.
Don't
I'm
imagine
so
that.
Sorry, everyone.
I don't want to imagine
I
that
just
in
got
either
fired.
Direction.
The Watchers Council just fired me from this podcast. Yeah, but I'm just saying that I think that it goes in that direction. I don't think it was Xander's idea. I think it was Anya's idea. You know? It's Anya's kink, but it flows in that direction.
Jesus.
That's what I think. But listen,
I hate thinking about this.
I cannot wait to get all of your emails telling me what I did wrong and analyzing this spanking kink.
Sure.
Speaking of kinks, Xander is looking ripped. Did you notice his fucking arm?
Can you believe that I didn't notice?
You're the one on Hunk Watch. What
I
the hell?
Know. I don't know.
Well, he's wearing this blue sweater in the scene that is like painted on his body. And
oh,
like,
yeah. Now that you say it, it's ringing a couple bells.
Ringing some bells for you. Yeah. It's like, I'm here for painted on sweaters when you have some guns like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Xander is, we learned, selling those energy bars that Regina George loves, you know, the ones that
are full of
no carbs.
Fatty goodness
is
the way he describes the ingredients.
That's really, I mean, the point of this scene for me is that we learn that Anya and Xander are spanking, that Willow learns it, that Xander drops his cards everywhere when it's revealed. And,
which is further evidence that he's the one getting spanked, I feel
you
like.
You think?
I don't know. I feel like he would be less bajickety about it if he was administering the spanking.
Administering. I think that he is uncomfortable with the idea of spanking no matter what. Like, I think he would have dropped the cards even if he were spanking Anya.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah, I see that.
Wow. Well, as predicted, we have already talked about spanking for 5 full minutes
on
this episode and more to come. So the other piece of this scene, of course, is to establish that they are worried about Buffy's involvement with the initiative.
Right.
And then, you know, we cut to this test that they're doing to like measure her abilities.
Mm.
Shout out to Buffy's Black Beanie is back. The Black Beanie
Black,
the Black Toque. We will hear from Kate Leth later in this episode, so I want to make sure that everyone's languages
inclusive
are respected
language,
here. But she's wearing the Black Beanie and a nice silver coat, kicking all the ass all over town.
Dude.
Yes. I assume you're referring to me, dude, or the collective listenership, dude.
Both. This is great. Love seeing this. Love seeing Buffy kick everyone's ass.
When your like upper lip sticks to your teeth, you're really going in a particular place. Where are we going?
No, I just really like it. I feel like
It took them 42 minutes to track her, and she neutralized them in 28 seconds.
Yes, which is, excuse me, a little bit of hell math.
Hell math.
Oh, so lovely to hear the hell math jingle.
Yeah, so...
You're like, yeah, anyway.
Well, I mean, we lived it. We all heard it. I'm still working on my point, which is, well, it's two things. First of all, I love how pleased Riley is. This is like extending from what we just saw in the previously on. I love how like giddy he is. He's like, my girlfriend kicked everybody's ass tight. And also, I just feel like to get way ahead of ourselves.
Sure. Yeah.
We assume Professor Walsh is a smart lady. She's heading up a secret government operation that deals specifically with supernatural whatnots. And her big plan to take out Buffy later in the episode is to just trap her in a sewer with two Pulgara demons that like they have under like mind control.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
When she just took out a slew of G.I. Joes.
Right.
This is just like very poor planning.
I agree. And I got there at the end of the episode too, where I was like, wait, this was your plan? Like you literally
thought you were some kind of mastermind.
Yeah, not a great mastermind plan, but whatever.
So, love Buffy recounting in the lunchroom.
What
did I miss?
You missed. Professor Walsh is going to pivot to want to kill Buffy, but in the first moment when she comes out of that fucking truck and she's like looking at Buffy, who has just done this thing that she's never seen anyone do, she is hot, hot, hot for Buffy. She's just like looking at her. And my note is, please go back and pause for Walsh's love eyes. Okay. The other thing that I want to point out, because this is an episode, I mean, really, this is like a sexual tension episode. It's just full of like kinks and all sorts of nonsense. So Graham is like, hey, Buff, thanks. And Forrest is like, fucking Buffy, which will set off the course of Forrest's narrative for this episode, which is he's so pissed that his boyfriend has a new girlfriend.
Yep.
Okay. He is. Now we can get to the lunchroom. Oh boy, I have things to talk about in the lunchroom.
Okay. So this like whole deal where she's like, and then I kicked all the commander's asses, and then I used one of them as a shield, and he absorbed a blast of 12,000 volts. This is fine. What?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like in military training, like you do suffer some injuries and stuff, right? I don't know. We're really not skilled enough.
I think it's supposed to be a secret.
Oh.
I mean, that's what I've heard from
you were
people
never
that
more
I've known.
Of a tiny child than in that moment.
Well, that's
I
what I've heard.
It's supposed to be a secret.
From people who've gone through like Marines boot camp, they're like, it's really bad and I wish I never did it, but I can't tell you anything about
it. Right. Like, I would imagine that there's, I mean, probably not to this extent, but I would imagine that there's some bodily trauma when you're learning how to be a soldier.
Oh, yeah. Not to mention psychological trauma.
Yes. So, okay. So... Jenny, you have a segment that you've begun, called, well, does it have a name? It's like Riley's palm size.
The size of Riley's hands on Sarah Michelle Gellar's body. Watch.
Yes.
2019.
So we'll get that.
I mean, 2018. I mean, what year is it?
When this episode airs, it will still be 2018.
Thank you. I don't know. They just started like selling like Christmas tree candy on November 1st. I'm all turned around.
Yeah, we're really in it. We're in the thick of things now. But Riley, so okay, fine, right. They're like having this exchange and Riley walks in and Buffy's immediately distracted. And Willow's like, what? And she's like, Riley just walked in. Pan to Riley picking up every apple in the basket for like so long. Like he's just like picks up an apple. Like the cut is like just like 2 seconds too long. Where dude, you're like, dude,
there's a really great Riley cut later that's like 2 seconds too long that I can't wait to talk about. Maybe that's the theme of this episode.
Just a little bit too much of Riley.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have a moment from later that fucking kills me. We'll get there. Okay. So anyway, Riley palming apples just reminded me of your segment.
The size of Riley's hands on apples in the lunchroom. Watch. Yeah. 2018.
I mean, I feel like I know it's mostly specific to Sarah Michelle Gellar, but I just
he's
feel
a
like,
huge man.
Right. Like
living in a regular sized world.
I feel like the segment should be the size of Riley's palms. Like, you know, on
hands,
whatever.
His whole hand.
His whole hand.
Because I'm we're sorry. Not usually seeing his palms. We're seeing
Just the wrap of his fingers.
The wrap of his fingers. Exactly. Obscuring his palms because they are adjacent to whatever he is gripping.
So anyway, he chooses, after all of that apple palming, he chooses a Twinkie.
Can we just talk about Twinkies are disgusting?
Yeah, but Twinkies were such a thing in the 90s. I mean, but they still so are gross. Such a thing.
There's so many. Okay, butterscotch crumpets, oatmeal cream pies, ding dongs. What were the other like ones that were like ding dongs, but they were like hot dog shape? Rolos? No.
Oh.
Rolos are candy.
Rolos are candy, but I do know what you mean. I don't know what they're called.
There's like two.
Devil dogs.
Yes.
Devil dogs. Wow.
Exactly.
I can't believe that just came out of my brain.
All of that like sort of like single serve.
Most
extreme cake stuff.
Sure. But most of what you listed are either chocolate based cakes with cream filling, or they have frosting of some kind. So what about the people who don't want as much of the sweet stuff and they just want the vanilla cake? That's who the Twinkies are for.
I would say Twinkies and oatmeal cream pies have a comparable amount of cream.
So you're going oatmeal cream pie over Twinkie.
Oatmeal cream pie was actually my tip top number one
fave. Actually, I fucking loved an oatmeal cream pie, I do have to admit.
At my mom's house, we never had any trash.
Meaning food like this.
Yeah. But in my dad's house, there was like soda and oatmeal cream pies. And I would wait for my dad to go to bed. And then I would turn on MTV, which we didn't have at my mom's house.
Yes.
And I would drink a Pepsi, sometimes a Coke. My stepbrother is like, one of them preferred Coke and one of them preferred Pepsi. So there was
so
always
they got both.
Yeah. It
what
was
kind of fucking
wild
Wonderland
over there. Says. It was like Eden. And then I would eat an oatmeal cream pie, drink a soda, watch MTV or The Legendary Journeys of Hercules, or later when there was a spinoff, Xena Warrior Princess.
Wow. Getting in all of your candy, both visually and
I was like, my dad edibly? Can never know that I'm eating this oatmeal cream pie, that I'm drinking this soda, that Xena is making me gay. Help!
Oh, wow. Wow. What a monologue that was. Also, I think it's really nice that you said it was like Eden in an episode where we meet Adam for the first time.
Oh, God.
Just fuck, saying.
Fuck.
Okay.
People say they want to delete this season.
Yeah.
I just feel like we're really starting to get a face full of it right now.
Well, Adam is pretty rough. Yeah. The whole thing is pretty rough. But I'm having a joy in this episode. I took so many notes and I laughed aloud. So, like, I'm
yeah.
Here.
No,
but
no, no.
You know, that's the thing about Buffy, right? Is that, like,
even the worst season is still great.
Well, but it's because we love the fucking characters so much. So, like, in these episodes where the plot is just like, what? And the like, ancillary stuff is like, what? We still have our Willow. We still have our, you know, our core characters who are like, oh, Giles and Spike, you know, like
we get the
delights we need to keep us on.
So
this scene ends, of course, in the lunchroom with Willow saying, everyone's getting spanked but me. She's really upset. And so since we've been talking about spanking so much, Jenny,
please,
I couldn't think of anywhere we should go but to our dear friend Kate Leth,
queen of fashion, queen of spanking.
It's time for our friend Kate to give you the Buffy fashion update. Oh, zig zag part, how lovely are thy angles. Your roots so brown, your ends so white, like darkness fading into light. Oh, zigzag part, oh, zigzag part, how lovely are thy angles.
Welcome back to Buffy Fashion Watch and to the holiday season yet again. This isn't a holiday episode, but I'm getting in the spirit, and how could I be inspired by anything more than I am inspired by Tara McClay's hair? We've talked on episodes where I've guested, I think I've mentioned it in Fashion Watches before, but I was an avid wearer, user, worshiper of the zigzag part in my hair for all of the years that I watched Tara do the very same. Now, this is a really exciting episode if you're a Tara fan, and I'm a Tara fan because I'm a person with a heart who lives and exists in this world. It is so exciting to see her It is so exciting to watch her talk to Willow, and even though it's early days and it's stumbling days, ugh. Willow, you're so sad that everyone's getting spanking but you, but just give it time. Speaking of Willow, because I must, she's at her fashion best in this episode, as far as Willow goes in the, you know, 2000s. I think her hair looks really cute. I have so much nostalgia for these knit sweaters, all this crocheted and fuzzy fabric and ridiculous long skirts and giant chunky heels. And even Buffy's wearing one of those super long skirts, although she is also wearing a very cute cropped leather jacket thing with wrist cuff bracelets, which is just a great look even today. And of course, I will mention, because I think I would be fired if I didn't, the fact that, yes, she wears a toque. If you don't know what a toque is the Canadian way to say beanie. It's a French word. It is T-O-Q-U-E. And every single time someone says beanie to me, I assume they mean the floppy hat that sort of hangs off the back of your head that every boy you dated in college that you probably shouldn't have was wearing. And every girl that you should date now is probably wearing. But yes, Buffy's wearing one and she's pulling it off alongside a questionable shiny silver blue puffy jacket in the opening scene. Buffy gets a lot of great looks in this episode. Her orange halter top when she goes to the Bronze with her many, many, many necklaces, some of which my mom definitely owned because my mom is very cool. And some less exciting outfits like the weird brown tunic top that she's wearing towards the end of the episode. But overall, it's just a really good episode for fashion. Everyone gets some highlights. We're seeing some Anya. People are getting to know each other. And Willow stays the night. And you know why she did? That's right. It's that zigzag part. Remember, be especially nice to retail workers and people in food service this holiday season. And with that in mind, I'll see you at the mall.
That was our friend Kate. She gave you the Buffy fashion update.
Well,
oh, thank you, Kate. Thank you for that. Thank you for agreeing to our spanking transition. We love you.
So Spike found a place.
Spike found a place, kind of. Also, Jenny, do vampires fucking sleep or not? I just feel like we're getting mixed messages about this. They seem to sleep.
I think it's like, so Spike seems to indulge in human vice. He smokes, he drinks, he sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he also has like no conscience, right? Then you have somebody like Angel who seems to actually like just like spend all of his time conscious,
uh-huh.
brooding,
uh-huh.
never indulging in any vice uh-huh. of any kind.
Right. So you think it's like they can elect to do human type things if they want to, but they don't have to for survival.
That's the impression that I get. Also, is anybody really going to be able to sleep laying on a bare stone tomb?
Yeah.
Covered in what looks like a drop cloth from a recent like painting site.
Well, he needs to keep many drop cloths on hand for all of his fucking rendezvous in the sun.
Sure. That's true. That's true. He doesn't require a lot of fabric coverings.
This scene is wonderful because a couple of our favorite lovers are back together again. The Odd Couple.
Yeah, sniping at each other.
Needs a woman's touch. Care to have a crack on it? Now, to that, Spike, I'll give you a patriarchy jingle, but before I do that, I will say that I laughed mostly because of Giles' response. Now, jingle, please.
The patriarchy!
While the patriarchy jingle was blaring in all of our ears, Jenny was like, what was Giles's response? And it was just that he was upset with Spike, but he was also like, oh, this again. You know yeah. what I mean? Like he misses Spike. And you know what?
Sure. Well, Spike Ethan just left town. So yes. Giles is once again lonely.
Craving the touch of an English bloke.
companion. But Spike's not having it. He's like, our business is done now that I have your $300. I don't want to hear from you, see you, nothing. Leave me alone. I don't need you. Fuck you, Dad.
Yeah. And Giles is kind of hurt by this. And like Giles has a couple of points that he makes before he gets tossed out, which is like maybe there's a higher purpose, and he gets totally railroaded by Spike.
Yeah. Even
railroaded by Spike.
even if there wasn't a higher purpose, like he's appealing also just to the fact that Spike likes to destroy things.
Right.
And he could be destroying things as part of a team.
Right. It's very sweet. And he also makes another point, Giles does, about Spike's choice to stay in Sunnydale. Now, Spike says later on in the episode, like, I'm staying here until they fix me, right? But I just feel like
he just likes hanging around with the gang.
He does. It's like his little family is also here, even though he hates them.
It's like, so what's the deal? They're not gonna kill Spike because he's harmless,
right?
Slash charming, slash hot, but they are gonna like let him, you know, sort of move in the general direction of trying to get fixed.
Yeah, it's very, it's...
All rules are suspended when it comes to Spike.
Yeah,
because
true.
He is hot.
I fall victim to
and
those.
Funny.
That rule suspension all the time. So Giles leaves Spike's crypt and we go to the initiative where two things happen as we roll into this scene. One is that the dialogue is written, of course, so that we think they're talking about doing it, right? Are you ready? Jenny,
I hate it.
Since this is an audio-based endeavor,
sorry.
I'm gonna ask you to stop making
that. I just hate it. I don't like this enough.
Okay, what don't you like? Let me pause my train of thought so that we can discuss why you made that noise for so long.
I'm sorry. I just don't like how they're like, get it, like sex.
Yeah, it's very over the it's very over the head. And like the first turn of the scene where she hasn't gotten her retinal scan yet is really over the head. And then like once they get into the initiative, it continues with, you told me it was big, but you never told me it was huge. And Riley says, I don't like to brag. And we're like, we get it.
Yes, penis, vagina.
So, but the other LOL moment is like this massive deal they make of her seeing the initiative.
That's- this is Sarah Michelle Gellar's finest and most demanding performance to date. She pretends to find the initiative impressive. Once again, for those of you just joining us, the initiative is like an airplane hangar with a pit dug out and filled up with tin foil. Filled up with Reynolds, like an aluminum tin foil.
The good kind, the kind that's expensive.
Yeah.
The like thick foil.
Yes. And there's like three or four tables that like demon bodies are. Why? It's not sterile. They're doing all kinds of stuff down there, right? All kinds of procedures, we assume. Assumably, like if they're doing behavior modification, this is like surgery sensitive. You don't want like
germs.
Airborne.
Sure.
Bacteria or germs or whatever getting into the mix. They're just, it's fine. We'll just cut them all open down here in this tinfoil lined pit. The tinfoil just makes everything fine. And it's so stupid. I hate it. So
Jenny's really upset.
I hate the initiative.
Yeah, I think most of us are with you.
And Sarah Michelle Gellar won an Emmy for this episode, of course, as we all know, for doing such a great job.
That's a lie.
At pretending that this is impressive because it is not. And I hate it. Also, the elevator never drops off where they got off.
Oh, it drops off at a different place?
That's right.
Oh, yeah, it drops off at the top. And they always are at the bottom. Like, it drops off at the top of the stairs.
Yes. How dare.
How dare you? You thought you could pull one over on us. Not today, whoever wrote this. Somebody.
David
was it David Fury? Please continue. No. Please keep talking.
Oh my God, sorry. I just realized the note that I have following Sarah Michelle Gellar's like acting or whatever was, wow, look at all this foil.
So Riley and Buffy are still in the throes of like, oh, this is where you work. Oh, you're such a hot G.I. Joe. Oh, you're such a hot chosen one. And they start to kiss. And then Walsh, beginning what will be her journey into continually loving to watch Buffy and Riley do sexual things together, rounds the bend and is like, hello.
No.
Hello. Why don't you stop doing that? And then, of course, she's in such a good mood by the fact that she's gotten to witness this that she makes a very rare joke.
Your visitors pass. I've assembled some reading material to bring you up to speed.
Oh. I thought I was never going to get homework from you again.
You can't take that home. That's classified material, highly sensitive. When you're through reading those pages, you'll have to eat them.
To which Riley's like, she's joking, and she is so pleased with herself. She's I did.
She jokes so infrequently that her jokes are completely indiscernible from the rest of everything else that she says. Also, she's like gesturing to the tinfoil pit. She's like, we call this the pit. Really? Where'd you get that name? Wow, what a cool name. This is a serious ass government operation.
So we see all the weapons. We see this new comm cam, which Riley, so thank you so much for explaining to us that comm cam means communications camera. Riley,
listen, there's a lot of fast paced,
oh god,
short syllabled military lingo flying around down in the pit.
Buffy gets a pager, which will be very, very important. This is the first pager she's had, which means that we certainly haven't heard one of the most infamous lines of the whole series yet, right? If the apocalypse comes, beep me?
Doesn't that happen in season one?
Oh, yeah, but she doesn't have a fucking pager.
What the fuck?
So, okay, backtracking. Yeah, because I saw this and I was like, oh, I guess that line hasn't happened yet. I just feel like it's happened and it happened so long ago, but... yeah, she said she's been meaning to get one of these. So joke was on us in season one, had we needed her.
Or at least on Giles.
Yeah. So
also in this scene, in the pit on the monster tables, there are a couple like Cthulhu looking swamp things.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Engelman is working on them. And
fuck Dr. Engelman.
And Walsh says forebodingly, soon enough, they'll be under our control. And then she goes on about how Dr. Engelman is like a leading dude in xenomorphic behavior modification.
He's the fucking worst. I wish Adam had skewered him. I will tell you what.
That would have been nice.
Right? Professor Walsh's monotone is very, very intense in this episode. And my theory is that like the direction was to be as monotonous as possible so that when we get to the end where she's screaming after Riley, it's like a complete turn, right? Because for the first bit of the episode, I'm like, I mean, we get it, but you could like inflect a little bit.
Right, right.
Anyhow, let's please get to the next scene. Let's please leave the pit so we can get to, I've been trying to find a doll's eye crystal my entire life.
I've been trying to find a doll's eye crystal my entire life. Well, since June, anyway. Where'd you get it?
It was my grandma's, I think. I found it a long time ago in my attic.
I want you to have it.
Oh, no, Tara. That's really sweet. I can't. It's like a family heirloom.
Listen, everybody, I have a lot to say about this fucking scene. Yes. I titled this commentary, Lesbians!
Good.
Capital L, capital E, capital, you get it.
All the letters are capital.
All the letters are capital.
Sure.
Tara's like, fucking, here's this goddamn
priceless,
incredibly
rare
family heirloom. My grandmother gave it to me, but I have met you, and I will give it to you. I will give it to you because I am a lesbian. A lesbian witch. Now listen, I know, whatever.
What kind of family heirlooms have you given away to somebody?
Feelings
you
are
just
feelings.
Met?
Listen, Jenny, I don't know if you know this about me, but I happen to give advice to a lot of tiny queer people for a decade of my life. And I can tell you that among other things, I had an email. I think we might have even talked about it on the podcast before. I had an email written to me from somebody who said, I have been dating my girlfriend for 1 month and I would like to commemorate this occasion by giving her a dove, a live dove bird, a dove bird. She wanted to give her girlfriend a bird.
We did talk about this, and a live creature is one thing, but a family heirloom is a different
thing. It's like, and listen, everyone has feelings. Obviously, not just queer women have feelings, but like, I just feel like this is some gay shit right here, you know?
It's very gay shit.
Some fucking gay shit is happening. I need to get, and Willow, to her credit, is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. hold the fucking phone.
Hey, let's just like press pause here for one second.
Like, I haven't even explored how I feel about lady crystals. So just give me a second. Tara is like, even right out of the gates before she invites her immediately. That's the other thing, right? So Tara's like super sad that Willow doesn't take the crystal, but she's like, oh, it's fine. You can like see her.
But also, yeah, she's like bummed, but Willow's like, well, let's do spells with it together.
And Tara Tara's like, how about tonight? Like, Tara, I love
Play it
you,
cool.
But just fucking calm. Just
be cool for
just,
once.
Just be cool. Be cool. She can't be cool at all. And no. Willow, heartbreaker. Willow is like, I have plans. And I don't think that this particular crowd of people, like, she's really, and like,
she didn't have to say it like that.
She didn't have to say that. She could have just said, I have plans tonight. I mean,
but how about tomorrow?
But how about tomorrow? But I think she felt, I mean, this person, she's getting very close to you. They've removed petals from a rose and they've moved a vending machine, Jenny.
Those are two big steps that's in any relationship.
Yes. Yeah. So they're, you know, they're moving pretty quickly along the common trajectory for relationships. And I think she felt that Tara was wondering why she wasn't invited, you know, like why she couldn't come along. So she had to justify
it.
But the way she says it is like crappy. And also there's a lot going on for Willow here. And we see more of it. As we saw some of it last episode, and we're going to see more of it in this episode, yes. Where she's not willing to talk about Tara at all, which is because
willing is not the word I would use.
Able. There she's not able to talk about it because she's really confused about whatever is happening. And she knows it's like that thing where you know that it's more than a friendship, but you haven't ever had it before. So you just keep thinking like it's a friend. Like you had the experiences like this, right? Where you're like, this is a friend. It's a friend. It's a friend. It's a friend. And then you know it's not, but you're not able to really give it any other meaning apart from I can't talk about it because I think it's more than that, but I don't know what that means. And this is where our sweet, sweet Willow is.
Wait, have I had that?
I mean, I don't know. The first girl that you ever were with, were you just like, yep, gay? Or like, was it more of a question?
I guess it was more of a question. Also, there was like no talking about it because she had a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh boy. But yeah, I mean, and when I was like, well before I was out, I came out at 17, and when I was like 12, I had experiences where I knew that my feelings were intense, but I didn't know why. They weren't sexual feelings even.
Right,
like they were just
right.
Really intense. Like, please have this family heirloom crystal. Please. But I couldn't quite put my finger on it. No weird Freudian pun intended. Okay, so why don't we go to room
314. Oh my fucking God, Adam, this is a mess. The metal plate on the side of his head, the for no good reason, he has the exact same bone structure in his face on one side as the other, but half of the skin is either necrotized or demonic or whatever.
Necrotized? Does that mean like deaded?
Yeah, I hope I'm
nailing
that. It's just like diagonally split across his face. This is really, really bad.
It's like, but the thing is like they're trying to make a, like give a nod to Frankenstein, of course.
Right.
But it's just so unrealistic because we're in this like high tech tinfoil lab. And like, they definitely could have taken the head of a monster. Like, you know, they didn't have...
Right,
just,
or is the head of a dude.
Right, any
like, where this
singular
where
head.
Where did this human body come from?
Ooh, shit, good question. Where did this human body come from? We, like, pause the episode to take a minute. We're like, fucking, we need Detective Angel.
Detective Angel.
Oh, any chance to get a little bit of that Detective Angel jingle. Anyway, yeah, we don't know. Thoughts? Great. Email us at bufferingthevampireslayer @gmail.com. Whew. So also before we go to the next scene, this is the first time that we have this mommy baby situation of Adam and Maggie. She says, our baby. How's our baby? And of course, later, and we'll get there.
No.
Okay, we'll get there. I'm sorry, but we will eventually have to get there. But before we do that, and before we go to the bronze, I just want to say that in this scene, apart from having the reveal of Adam, we hear for the first time she's an unnecessary risk, right? This
right,
is
right.
When we're like, uh-oh, Walsh might be coming after Buffy.
Yeah, I mean, the whole premise that a secret government organization would be like, oh, let's just bring her in.
Right.
Yeah,
I know.
Okay.
We're all here. We're all here with you.
Anything goes when you're down in the pit.
So we go to the Bronze. The Bronze is looking different to me. That just like actually the set. And I don't know why. Like, I didn't do enough research to figure out what about it, but it seems like they're at their common table, but it's in a different place. It's like there's no stairs. Do you have something, Jenny?
I do have something. I recently received some DMs.
Ooh.
From a fantastic songwriter, musician named Mitski.
Uh-huh.
Who is, maybe you've heard, but I'm sure lots of our listeners are really into her music. She's so great. She DM'd me a week or two ago out of nowhere, apropos of nothing, and was just like, has there ever been a front of house at the Bronze? Front of house is the person who is in charge of sound for bands. They sit at the mixing desk. Sure. They make sure the room sounds good. If it's the kind of club where the front of house person is also running monitors, then they have a monitor board. It's a whole thing. She continued, genuinely asking, I never noticed any. Also, have you thought about how it would actually suck to play at the Bronze? Because you're playing to the hall of people, but also the cafe and the shop, but also the bar. Also, it's always open. So does that mean you soundcheck while people are there hanging out? I know this is a lot. This is just what I've been thinking about today.
Wow. Thank you, Mitski. New friend of the pod.
Yeah. Deeply important questions somebody was finally brave enough to ask.
Yeah. Well, add to that list, is this a different set? Because I just like, I don't see the staircase I normally see. Normally that table abuts the dance floor and it doesn't here. So either they're sitting...
Abut.
Yeah, you're right. I said abut.
Tight.
Either they're sitting at a different table or this is like they just didn't use the same set. I don't know. Talk amongst yourselves. Anyway, we're at the Bronze. Buffy's not fucking here. Willow and Xander and Anya are talking about how she's late. And then she brings the whole flipping initiative with her.
Right. And I've been trying to figure out which popular 90s young person's clothing store at the mall the initiative boys most look like they are dressed from.
Ooh.
And I think that I landed on Aeropostale.
Yeah.
With a close second of the Gap.
No, I think like Aeropostale.
Forest hooded sweater.
Mm-hmm. Aeropostale, also like Hollister could be in the running.
No, Hollister is like surfy.
Yeah, but they have, well, all right. I'll give you Aeropostale.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So Buffy arrives now. I don't know that what Buffy has done here is necessarily, it's like hard to,
it feels like pretty crappy to me. She's been blowing off her friends to spend time with her new boyfriend and his weird secret ops government group.
Right.
And then they're finally going to have a night together. And she's like, oops, just accidentally brought five fucking dudes. Not just my boyfriend.
Right.
But like that's, four other people.
That's the thing is like.
Also, the fact that no one's hitting on Willow is insane.
Oh, well, I don't think they really get the chance. I mean, I feel like this all.
What, they all have to go get drinks?
Yeah, that's true. So Anya runs away scared because of the initiative dudes, which is super valid. And then there's this moment, which we kind of already touched on, where Willow calls Buffy out and is like, you know, I could have fucking brought somebody and I didn't. And like, it's not cool that you did this, which I really am here for this. I'm here for like strong Willow being like, hey, this hurts my feelings.
And I'm here for Buffy being like, oh, wow, I fucked up.
Yes. She acknowledges
Who are you going to bring?
Right. And then Willow is like, skirt. No, nobody. No, no boys, not one boy. There's no boys in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. Boys. Love boys. And Willow is just like astutely asserting here that things are moving too fast as well with the initiative and Buffy, and makes a really clear distinction because Buffy's immediately like, but I thought you liked Riley. And Willow's like, no,
I don't feel like she said it like that.
I'm sorry. I'm ultimately annoyed with Buffy in this scene. I was coming out saying like, you know, when she first walked in, I wasn't sure, but what I was leaning toward was, but then she pisses me the fuck off. She's like pretty self-absorbed, not a new character trait for our Buffster, but in this scene in particular, in this episode in particular, I'm kind of like, okay, we get it. You're falling in love. And like,
well, she's falling in love, but it's also like resources. Also, one of the, you know, main dating difficulties Buffy has is that she either meets someone at work and that's complicated because they're not a regular guy, or she meets someone at school and they are all too regular guy.
Don't say his name. Don't even say his name.
But Riley is kind of this interesting mix. So I think like it makes sense for Buffy to be extra pumped
but
and extra caught up.
I just think she could do better. I think she could have done better.
Well, I think we could all do better.
Okay. You're just going to defend anyone I get mad at for the whole season.
Somebody's got to do it. Well, yeah, but sometimes I get mad at Riley when you're not. So
That's true. So anyway, Willow's worried. Buffy's like, it's fine. And then literally every pager goes off all
the
same time.
Wait, but first, sorry, I think it's important that Willow's like, what's their agenda?
Oh, right.
Right? And then she like goes on this thing that kind of like hints at like the idea of like restorative justice.
Yes.
Like,
are they going to catch and release?
Rehabilitating, right. Like turning monsters into not monsters, or are they just killing them, experimenting on them, yeah, using them, whatever. Okay, and then yes,
and
every
then,
pager
and
goes
then it's
off.
Like pager Christmas.
Beep, 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 beep. And then the grossest thing ever that has happened up to this minute marker is Riley says, Mother wants us.
He does?
Yes.
I did not hear it.
Yes.
Oh,
so
I'm
gross.
So upset. I'll never watch this episode ever again so that I never have to risk hearing it. So then, of course, we get this like pan through of the army, which this pan is very reminiscent of the pan that we saw in Hero and Angel, if you're watching Angel with us, when he's sort of infiltrated the demon army.
Right, right.
Instead, now Buffy has infiltrated the Initiative army and stands out like a sore thumb in a tank top, you know.
Sure, and sure. She's patrolled in this halter many times.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, and we sort of got a little bit of this when you were talking about what Willow was asking. Like, this is the real divide between the Initiative mind and the Scooby mind, is we ask questions. Always we ask questions, and we're seeing here, of course, that no one does. And Riley and Buffy get into this later too, of like, I was trained not to ask questions. So they're all like dumbfounded by her being like, what does it want? Like, why do we need to not harm the thing? Like, I need to know these answers because my fucking life is on the line.
Right.
And these are important questions. And they're like, oh, I'm skirk. And they don't answer anything basically. And turn the corner.
Meanwhile,
I was going to say, if you don't have anything else in this scene, Jenny, the one thing I do want to say is the transparency layover work in this scene is really quite, we've come a long way from Hush.
Oh yeah.
This is
a
beautiful rendering of the monster. And then Dr.
Engelman.
Fuck yourself.
Bogara demon.
Yeah, sure. He lays over on top of the one transparency, another transparency that gives it its weapon.
Yeah.
It was very satisfying. Now we may proceed.
So Willow suddenly doesn't have plans anymore. So she goes by Tara's place and she's like, knock, knock.
Just ran right to Tara's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's like, well, do you still want to hang out? And Tara's smile is very sweet.
It really is. She's very sweet. She's very excited. And then I guess they just do magic all night long.
Yeah, I guess they just like do spells.
Just some spells. Spells all night long. Just like some really long
because
spells.
Willow never makes it home.
Literally comes home
because
the next day.
She was doing so much magic.
Yeah, you know how it is. Ladies got a magic.
Yeah, all late into the wee hours of the morn.
So, of course, while they do magic, we cut back into the woods, or apparently in my notes, I've called it the field. Anytime they're doing things, I've called it the field in my notes. And Buffy is just chatting. And Riley has to be like, listen, not all of us can like talk in our tube tops while we patrol. Like, I need to concentrate. Cut to Sulky.
Wait. Before we go there.
Yes.
They have this exchange about how he's like, yes, no, she likes you. She liked you before I did. Classic misstep, which sails past Buffy for a second, but then she ultimately comes back to it and is like, what? What do you mean? And this is where Mark Lucas is just filling time. Just he reacts to it like five times in a row where he's like, So it goes on forever.
Oh, they really stretched this one out.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Then we cut to Silky Silky Forest. I've always been Riley's second in command, and now he picks a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy. You got to find a new boyfriend, you know? It's okay.
I love how into it Graham is.
Oh, my God. Graham is so stoked. Graham is like, yeah. Graham is just like... Like, I really feel like I like Graham.
He just seems like a supportive friend.
Yeah. He's just, like, laid back, here to do what he's here to do.
Yeah.
Never gets in anybody's fucking way. Uh-huh. I like Graham. Uh-huh. I never realized how much I liked Graham until this viewing.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm here for Graham. So for those of you who say I never like any of the men, you're mistaken. You are myth-taken.
Well, who knows what he's going to do
who knows
in the future.
But for right now, I'm a Graham fan. So the initiative, of course... spies Spike
on his way home from the grocery store or the gas station and the butcher.
Yeah, we find out later he's gotten smokes and blood.
Yeah,
just in a brown paper sack.
Sure.
Right, and they tase him, or they not tase him, they tag him rather with a tracker. He runs off, and then we move. Before we find out what happens with that tracker and that vampire, we move into a beautiful. A beautiful montage of them, Riley and Buffy fighting and fucking.
Oh God!
Now it's like it really is adding insult to injury here, because this is the scene we wanted with Buffy and Faith. It's the scene
right
we longed for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
people working in the same field.
Yes.
Getting riled up at work.
Yes.
And then taking it home.
Yes. And we didn't, of course, we never got this. And now we get the scene,
and
but it's with fucking Riley. And not only is it with Riley, but even if you like Riley, which one of us here does, this is a really silly scene.
Here's the deal. here's the deal.
I'm going to let you say it because I can't even.
So Sarah Michelle Gellar, we all know, is like sex on a stick.
Wow. Excuse us.
Look at her go.
Yeah.
She can make anything look hot, but she has been handed. You know that I love Mark Blucas. You know that I appreciate a hunk, but he is like a big wet lasagna noodle. They have no chemistry. Okay, that fucking scene where his arms are out like he's on the cross.
Yes, Jenny.
And
okay,
she's like kissing him down the center of his torso.
It's great. Let's just, I really feel like we need to take a minute with some of the scene breakaways to the fucking. The fighting is whatever. But there are a few. There is that scene. His arms are splayed. He is looking dead ahead into nothingness. And she's kissing down his pecs. He looks so upset. So there's that scene. Then there's a scene of just him taking off one of her boots. Her boots. Her motherfucking boots. I would like to hear from anyone in this room, in this listenership. Have you ever sexily taken off a shoe? Has that ever happened to anyone?
I don't know that.
A tall boot, a tall sexy boot, a zipped up boot to the thigh. Perhaps I will leave room for
a high heel.
But a fucking Aldo ankle length leather.
Stylish yet sensible patrol boot. Absolutely not.
Come on. I think she would have taken off her own boots.
What are we doing here?
And there was one sexy thing, but it came after so many non-sexy things that like my brain didn't have time to fully adjust. Because then there's this very quick cut of her, like, I think they're like almost Dirty Dancing standing, you know, where like he's behind her and she's facing forward.
Right, right.
And she like leans back
and they're like kissing kind of over her shoulder and
stuff.
And
the kiss is horrible.
Terrible.
It's terrible.
Their mouths do not belong together.
And you can tell later when they're in bed after the fact that like Sarah Michelle Gellar's really doing a lot of work to make this look good. Like she really is
right,
Mark.
Wait, sorry, when I say that she is sex on a stick, I mean that she is like incredibly gifted at selling things being hot.
Totally. The thing that I was surprised to see in this montage, besides the fucking boot, was her sucking on his finger. Wow. It was like
the opposite end of the spectrum. They were like, we need something to balance out the boot.
Seriously, like, I really feel like the director was like, listen, we got nothing. Suck his finger. Just fucking please.
Truly.
So anyway, they do it.
Oh my God. And then when he is like over her, she looks great on the pillow. He looks like, I don't even know. I love him. He is a wonderful hunk.
You know where he looks a lot better is when he's on the bottom. When Buffy's topping Riley, that's like the one moment I was like, yes. Yeah. Now we're in.
Like looking up at her with the awe appropriate for the scenario.
Yes, agree. So the other part of this scene that, of course, cannot escape mention is that as they're fucking, Walsh is fucking rubbing one out in her office.
Oh, God.
Watching.
Okay, that is so much worse.
I didn't think I was gonna say that.
Really bummed.
I don't.
That you said.
Should
that
I take it out?
Also, the fact that she's still watching at the
end—that's
end,
what I'm saying, Jenny.
She saw the same shit we did.
She was like,
she's still watching.
She was like, yeah, take that boot off. Take the other boot off.
No. Leave one boot off.
Oh my God, I'm like sweating. I've worked myself up to an actual, it was not a good day for a turtleneck sweater. Yeah. I am wearing, in honor of Riley, a turtleneck sweater while taping this. Okay, I'm really, really sorry that I said rubbing one out. I'm sorry. I didn't want to say it. I wish I had never said it. I can't take it back now. It'll be too hard to edit.
Okay.
It's too late.
Wow. Just as long as you feel bad about what
I felt horrible before it even left my, like I couldn't stop it. It was just happening. I got so worked up by the sex montage that it happened. Anyway, we go to Giles's house and guess who's back? Your favorite character, the little match girl, is back for you.
Oh, Yes, an entarped Spike comes busting through the door, which is never locked.
And we get this amazing back and forth between him and Giles where he's like, why should I help you? And Spike's like, because it's what you do. You help people. And then, of course, gets Spike to the end where he's like, yo, bro, you made me pay you.
Yeah, Giles gets that rebate.
Yeah. So Giles gets like 8 crumpled dollar bills back from his 300. And they begin work on taking the tracker out of Spike's back, which really is a pointless scene, a situation for every reason except for getting to see James Marsters' beautiful shoulders.
Right. And love getting to see Spike kind of drunk. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know. It just seems like that tracker is just like, it just looks like a long, skinny thing. I don't understand why it was actually hard to get out.
Yeah, they really. And here's, you want to know what I don't understand, Jenny, is why did we have to call Willow over to ionize the room? Is it just for the joke? Is it they were just dying to have everyone's hair stand on end?
The purpose of it was that the...
No, I mean, I know, to block the guys, but it's just like this episode didn't have enough material. And they were like, we need more scenes. Because like there's just no... I just feel like there's no point to all of this.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, we get a little bit of enjoyment out of like seeing Giles and Spike banter and like, but this moment when their hair stands on end, I'm like, you guys.
Yeah.
You guys. Also, the hair people were probably so annoyed. They did all that work for half of 1 second.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, but before we get there, Buffy wakes up. And Riley is staring at her. Buffy wakes up and Riley is already staring at her. Buffy wakes up and Riley is already staring at her. As someone who slept or tried to sleep in a bed last night that was plagued by an enormous cat who just sat really near me and stared at me all fucking night, I'm here to tell you, don't stare at people when they're sleeping.
Sure.
Just don't do it.
Sure, yeah.
It's rude.
But maybe he heard.
It's off-putting.
Maybe he heard that, like, you know, that's the kind of boyfriend she's into. She loves.
Oh, true.
She loves when her boyfriend's just rude and stare at
true,
her all night.
True.
Also,
his vitamin alarm goes off.
His vitamin alarm goes off, which is very endearing, even to me. But besides him staring at her, which of course I'm not here for, it is nice that Buffy has finally slept with a man who is still in her fucking bed when she wakes up and is still like, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I guess
and she can
he
remember
who shall
it.
Not be named was still in the bed or like came back with coffee or whatever the fuck. But like, it's just nice, despite what I think about Riley, it's very, very nice that Buffy has a fucking minute here where of normalcy. And we know how it rolls for Buffy. She'll only ever get a minute because then they have this back and forth, which we talked about already. I am how they train me, says Riley. They teach you to follow orders, not ask questions. And this is important. Like, Buffy's really starting to learn a little bit about him and how he functions and what have you. But Riley's also turned around by Buffy, because the first thing he does when he gets down to the tinfoil pit is he
looks through the 314 window.
Yes. And fucking Walsh immediately is like, oh, what have you been up to? Fucking, yeah, I watched you. And now what are you up to?
Also, the second that Buffy says, what's 314, the phone rings.
Yes. Ring, yes. Ring, ring, exactly. Ring.
God, yeah. The only thing less sexy than the chemistry between Buffy and Riley, or lack thereof, is Professor Walsh watching them.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. It's pretty rough. Makes a person say all sorts of horrible things they wish they could have never said. Anyway, beautiful Spike arms in the next little cutaway. Then, of course, we already discussed Willow's been out all night.
Out all night.
Buffy and Willow both have this like,
where were you last night?
Well, Giles then, you know, calls for Willow because they need to extend this fucking episode for us because we just can't get to the end of it. And Walsh sends Buffy to the sewers and the rest of the team elsewhere because,
with
of course,
$20,000 prototype.
Yeah, she doesn't give a fuck. She just wants this girl dead.
Well, I think she wants confirmation that she's dead.
Right, right. And here's
danger's my birthright, Buffy says.
Here's my question about this whole fucking thing, right? You've already marked your distaste with the fact that they've put two demons against her when they already saw what she could do.
Yeah.
But my question is, because they didn't just put two demons against her, they also gave her this device that would confirm when her heart stopped. So she didn't only have to kill the two demons. She had to, I think her move is what she did here is she killed one. Put the... No? Were you shaking your head at me?
Why? I think she just took it off. because it's on the ground.
Oh, and that's all you needed to do
that's
to that device?
I think there's a massive design flaw, because otherwise, how would it monitor your heart rate if it's not making contact with you?
Right. Well, see, that's why I thought that, wow, did she kill one, pop the thing on it as it died? So it was like still on a living but dead being.
Oh, interesting.
And then
who even knows if those things have heartbeats or if their hearts would beat at the rate of a human or if they have more than one heart?
Thank you. Those were all of my questions. Like just the whole...
I was under the impression that she just took it off, but I guess it does slow down, doesn't it?
It does. It slows all the way down to nothing.
Maybe because it's a prototype, there's a delay.
Maybe,
maintaining the signal.
I think maybe just write this episode better.
Write this episode better.
So she, of course, kicks the ass of these demons very easily and fools everybody. And what's crazy, you know, Jenny, is that when I watched this scene where Riley comes in, and we'll talk about it, obviously, but I, until this watch, had it in my mind that she could also see them, that like Buffy knew what was going on, because it's at such a perfect time, you know, it's like right when Riley's finding out, so that he gets to see that Walsh is a liar, but she doesn't know any of that. She can't see anything that's going on.
And Walsh is like, Riley, something terrible has happened. Buffy's dead. And then Buffy picks up the comm cam and she's like, bitch, you thought I was dead? I am not dead. You're going to be dead.
Yeah.
And then Riley's like, fuck you, mom.
Yeah, this is really rough. And we're going to really explore more of this in the next episode.
Oh, are we?
I mean, I don't think that's a spy. I mean, we know that like the blow that Riley has been dealt, whatever your feelings are for Riley, my heart fucking breaks for him in this moment, because this is the moment.
His mom tried to kill his girlfriend.
Well, and like he thought the world was good, and he thought that he could trust.
He was doing good. Yep.
He thought, right. He thought he could. Makes me like honestly want to cry. I just got very emotional. but like he thought he could trust what the orders he was following. He thought he could trust the people in charge, and he can't, and he couldn't, and they were bad. And that is really, really fucking sad. And he's also gone through this like pretty traumatic thing of thinking that this girl that he's falling in love with is dead, and then she's fucking popped up on the TV screen like, actually no, your fucking work mom tried to kill me.
Yeah.
Ooh. And
but you know what, some people in the world still care about other people in the world. Giles is like, Spike, it's not safe for you to stay in Sunnydale. Spike,
one last kiss before you go.
Your well-being is paramount to me.
Yes, right. The tracer is out of Spike, but he's going to stay because he, quote, wants to get fixed.
Because he feels like it.
Sure, buddy. We know that move. He's going to stay because he loves the Scoobies. Just admit it already.
Yeah.
This is the moment, of course, also that I was talking about with Walsh, where Riley walks out. And this is massive. And everyone in the initiative is watching it. And they realize how massive it is too, because Riley is like the right hand. You know, like he does fucking everything she says. And she is blood curdling, screaming. And she's like, first like, Riley. And then she's like, Agent Finn, I demand that you stop. Like, trying orders, trying anything. And he doesn't fucking stop.
Sorry, no. The
progression's the reverse.
Yes, it's Agent Finn. Agent Finn, I order you to stop. Riley.
And he does not stop. He does not look back. And good, because he fucking shouldn't. Because she's a fucking crazy killer. And that's very sad. We'll get more of that, I'm sure. And then we, of course, get this beautiful love scene between a monster and his creator. Walsh is like, I'm not going to let this little bitch.
Yeah, she's like, finally, some meaty dialogue for me to sink my teeth into. I'm going to give this whole monologue about like my motives and where I'm headed next. And then I'm going to get impaled and die.
Yeah. And this is a pretty intense scene. And we actually, with any luck, will have an interview for you with Lindsay Krause, who plays Maggie Walsh. We had intended to put it in this episode, but had to reschedule. So we're hoping to have that in the next episode because there's a lot going on here. And it's also a really interesting turn. It's like, I just feel like Professor Walsh was kind of a critical piece of the initiative. Why was the decision made to like kill her off when they killed her? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it seems very sudden. So we'll get the chance to talk to her and ask her about what the tinfoil pit was like. Hopefully, fingers crossed. And if we do get the chance to do that, it'll be in next episode.
Also, I've got big questions. Do you think that in the year 2000, this set looked impressive?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think it was ever impressive. I don't think in 1950 it would have looked impressive. Maybe a little more because it would have been like black and white. I don't know if that timeline checks out.
Sure, black and white,
but you know what I mean.
I think color TV was like the 60s, no?
Yeah, I think so. So Adam, of course, impales Walsh, and as he does, dropping her to the floor, she says, "Adam," and he says, "Mommy."
No.
So to help us out of that horrific, horrific thing, let's end this with some sexual tension awards, Jenny.
Yes, let's do it. Well, yes, indeed, of course, this episode's Sexual Tension Award nominees. It was hard to narrow down from all the contenders in this episode, but we did it. Here are your choices. First up, we've got...
you can do it. You can do it, Jenny.
I'm trying to think of something, some alliterative way to describe two Englishmen. It's Spike and Giles. Then, of course, we've got the on again, off again, G.I. Joe and G.I. Joseph couple, Forrest and Riley. We've got Let Me Give You a Family Heirloom That Is Priceless and Rare.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we just met a few weeks ago, let's cast some spells with it all night. Willow and Tara.
Yeah.
And then, guys. Friends, who deserves this win more than Willow and Spanking?
Yeah, it's true.
If you care about what I want, please vote Willow and Spanking, or follow your heart, vote via our Twitter poll. You can follow us at BufferingCast and cast your vote there.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you who won last episode. Now, we're headed to London, so I have to make this call before the poll officially closes, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be accurate. Coming in last place with 1% of the vote is Buffy and Riley. I do want to mention that somebody tweeted at us to say, "Oh my God, I accidentally voted for Buffy and Riley. I didn't mean it." So I think that's the 1%. Sorry, guys. In third place, we have Spike and Demon Giles, the 18%. In second place, we have Willow and Tara with The Rose, 22%. And taking this one, of course they did, is Ethan and Giles, gathering 59% of the vote and all of our fan fiction stories from here until the end of time. Congratulations, Ethan and Giles. Your trophies are in the mail.
Well, do we finally get to stop talking about this episode?
Oh my
now?
God, Jenny, we do. We really
So many things I'm anxious to never relive happened in this episode. And therefore, it is with great joy and a song in my heart that I tell you I am Jenny Owen Youngs. And when I'm not making this podcast, I am writing and recording songs. You can learn more about me and hear some of those songs at jennyowenyoungs.com/buffering. And you can give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
Yes, and I'm Kristen Russo. You can find everything you need to know about me, the work that I do with LGBTQ young people and their families, by going over to my website, kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. You can use that spelling to also follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. And I will let you know, which I also let you know at the top of this week's episode, that I have a new tiny little store. It's called Gay Stuff by Kristen. And my Queer and Forever Here shirt is in there, new colors. I have a little enamel pin. I have a safe space sticker. There's some signed copies of the book I wrote. This is a book for parents of gay kids. And you can now find all of that also on my website, kristinnoeline.com. Just click on shop and I'll take you to the little store.
Wow.
Fun, right?
Very fun.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BufferingCast. And you can always email us at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com.
Also, time is now to order holiday things from our store. If you want to get your loved one Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy stuff, we have Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy
children's t-shirts.
Hooray.
Because all of those older than 24 months and younger than adult size clothing have been furious with us because they couldn't fit this on their little bodies. So now we have something for them too. Get all of that. Get your socks, get your records before it is holiday time. And last but not least, of course, if you would take the time out to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be wonderful. The other day I had a conversation with somebody. They said, what do you do? I told them about my podcast. They looked it up and they were like, 5 stars and over 1,000 reviews. And I was like, dang, like you made me look really legitimate in the eyes of this person. So thank you. And the more, the merrier over there. And don't forget about Angela on Top. Go and rate and review them too.
Yes, please do.
And
till next time.
Professor Walsh, hey, don't you reckon if I could neutralize all your best guys in 28 seconds? Maybe I'm not just the slayer you're stuck with. Maybe I'm the slayer that you shouldn't fuck with. Come on. I thought it'd be fun to join the army. Or to be more specific, let the army join me. Go to work with my boyfriend, what could the harm be? But I was mistaken. Maggie, you're an evil. Professor Walsh, I'm feeling insulted. You think two Cthulhu swamp monster dudes are worthy opponents?
For me?
Honey, I'm not just the slayer you're stuck with. Believe me, I'm the slayer that you shouldn't fuck with. For sure. I thought it'd be fun to join the army. Or to be more specific, let the army join me. Go to work with my boyfriend, what could the harm be? But I was mistaken. Unfortunately, 'cause Maggie, you're an evil bitch, monster of death. Hey, hey, bitch, monster of death. Hey, hey, bitch, monster of death. Hey, 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 bitch, monster of death.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and Laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.